You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And today we are going to deep dive into the Seahawks game. We're going to go over a couple of the real themes that I think kind of came out when I looked at the tape. We're going to talk a lot about coverage today. We're going to talk a lot about blitzing today and specifically countering blitzes today. But first, I want to ask you to help support your local businesses. Whether they're your corner stores, your coffee spots, or your favorite shops, local businesses have always been on your team, supporting you and your community. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support, so let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol to tap and pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community, because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be. Official partner of the NFL. So before we talk about all that tape stuff, we have to quickly talk about the corresponding cut that the Vikings made. They brought in Jordan Brailford. They claimed him off of Washington's practice squad, added him to the active roster, and they waived Hercules Mataafa. This is a kind of a bigger move than most of these like deep roster moves that we don't usually cover, especially when they're like practice squad and stuff. While we're at it, Eddie Yarborough was on the practice squad, and they protected Chase McLaughlin, again, the kicker, on their practice squad. Seems like they're going to do that just about every week here. But when they did release Hercules Mataafa, he tweeted out a clown emoji and then quickly deleted it. I'm personally not one that cares too much about decorum. I think it's tough to get fired, and you know, you deal with it however you deal with it. But of course, I mean, that's a pretty big moment. Hercules Mataafa, a couple years ago, everybody thought that he was this really big, undrafted free agent steal, and the reason he went undrafted is because he plays defensive tackle, but he's about the size of a linebacker. So you either have to teach him how to play linebacker, teach him how to cover, teach him how to, you know, defend the run from a different place, or put a bunch of weight on him, or hope that he can just play undersized. And it seems like that third one was kind of on the verge of working out. He had a pretty good time in training camp. He made the team for a couple of years, but he sort of fell off toward the back half of 2019. And this year, things didn't work out very well at all. And now, I think, especially with James Lynch coming in at three technique for just a few snaps, I think he only had like seven pass rush snaps. But James Lynch coming in after a few snaps and showing out better than Hercules Mataafa did, and showing just enough impressiveness, meant that Mataafa is sort of a luxury at this point that the Vikings can't necessarily afford. So he was the one that was cut to bring in Jordan Brailford, who is now the next kind of pet project that is an undersized defensive lineman. There are also some questions headed into the first day of Wednesday practice. I think we'll all be watching the injury report like a hawk to see if Dalvin Cook practices and how involved he'll be, and the question of whether or not he will play against Atlanta. Of course, all the reporting that came out from people like Ben Gessling, even Tom Pelissero, I think, had it first, was that the MRI on Dalvin Cook's groin returned very good results. I don't want to say positive results because that could mean something else, but he was negative for a lot of really bad stuff, so that's a good thing. So it sounds like it was a minor enough injury, but even minor injuries can cause you to miss a week or two. So now we kind of have to watch to see exactly how much time Dalvin Cook will miss, if any. There is still a chance that he plays against Atlanta, but coming, you know, one game before the bye week, the Vikings have a week 7 bye. They could be a little bit strategic about this, and it probably shouldn't factor in that Atlanta is an 0-5 team, but they are a struggling team, and maybe you can get by with Alexander Mattison. But the Vikings typically don't look at it that way. They typically don't look at it by opponent. They don't really think to underestimate anybody. They usually look at it either with timing, or if they are going to prioritize any matchups, it'll be like prioritizing division matchups. Of course, on the other side of this bye week, the Vikings go through a kind of row of NFC North matchups. So maybe they do want to have him healthy for that. And they would sit Dalvin Cook, not because Atlanta is bad and they think that they can beat Atlanta without Dalvin Cook. I don't think they'd ever think that, but more because Atlanta isn't a divisional game and they've got a whole bunch of them on the other side of the bye, and they want to make sure he's healthy for that. Speaking of that Atlanta matchup, there was a positive COVID-19 test in Atlanta. Their rookie defensive tackle, Marlon Davidson, tested positive for COVID-19. He'll go on the COVID list, and now we kind of have to watch that whole thing and play the same game we watched headed into the Texans game, except it was the Vikings who had been exposed to the whole deal with the Titans. We have to watch and see if any more positives come out of the Falcons organization. They'll go in through their testing and their protocols and stuff. It is only the one case right now, and the Falcons actually had that happen before. They had AJ Terrell test positive. He went on the COVID list. They played their games on time. Everything turned out fine, and AJ Terrell is even back now off of the COVID list. So with any luck, things work exactly the same and the game goes off on time. But it is something to monitor that the Vikings bye week could be moved up if the situation in Atlanta gets any worse than it already is. As for the headlines with regard to the kind of deep dive into the Seahawks game, I think the most important thing to point out is the game that Mike Zimmer had as a defensive play caller. Forget the fourth down decisions, though I for the most part agree with him there as well. I think that from the aspect of scheming and basically trying to elevate the play of inferior players, because let's be honest, the Seahawks have an elite offense. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Russell Wilson, all of these guys, it's a really tall task to contain Russell Wilson and those players when you have two rookies starting at cornerback, you don't have your Anthony Barr, you have lackluster, we'll call it, defensive line play. You can't exactly just line up and expect to win one-on-one. And Mike Zimmer did a very good job of deploying coverages that put his players in a position to succeed without having to play at an elite level. What I mean by that is with like the zone coverages, and it doesn't matter if it was cover two or cover three, cover four, or whatever, because, you know, everybody kind of rotates between all of those. And Mike Zimmer defenses kind of famously don't have like a shell. He doesn't run like a cover three defense or like a quarters defense. It kind of changes depending on the situation. Sometimes he's run a lot of cover four, a lot of quarters. He did that a lot in 2018, did a lot of cover three before that. And now it's all very, very mixed up and a lot more cover two because he's protecting the corners. And what cover two allows you to do as a corner is basically not worry about getting beat deep because you have a safety that's going to pick a lot of that stuff up. And if you're in cover four, which means four deep people, you essentially as a cornerback are responsible for like a really large portion of the sideline, but you don't have to cover anything to the inside because that's going to either get picked up by a linebacker or by a safety, depending on how deep it is. So you can play a kind of committed technique that sells all the way out to protect the sideline. And if they were to cut inside, it would beat you, but that's okay because now it's going to be somebody else's responsibility and they're going to be able to pick it up for you. And the spacing on those zones and the timing of the pass offs and stuff was really, really nice. I'll get to that in a little bit. But for the most part, I think Zimmer deserves a lot of credit for putting his players in a position to succeed. And I think it takes a lot of humility to like understand, too, that these players are not Xavier Rhodes and Trey Waynes. These are kids that are struggling, still learning a lot of stuff, and simplifying it for them without making it some, you know, super vanilla defense that any offense can pick apart is a really impressive feat. And Mike Zimmer deserves a lot of credit there. I'm going to talk a lot more about the cornerback play and blitzing, which also had a really successful impact in just a little bit. But first, I want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Pepsi. This football season is different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. And you know what? I don't care that they're 1-4. I'm still excited to watch the Vikings. I think this game going up against the Falcons is going to be beautifully chaotic, and I'm pretty excited to step into the gallows and muck it up with some Falcons fans. But Pepsi is the refreshment that you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These are the passionate fans, and they're the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. All right, so sticking with that same concept, I want to talk to you about blitzes, because the way that Mike Zimmer deployed blitzes was also very good, especially on that last drive. And it did end up in a touchdown drive. So obviously, right, the effects are limited, but there were a lot of stops on that drive. There were a lot of incomplete passes. Some of them were just inaccurate Russell Wilson passes in the rain. It kind of looked like they slipped out of his hand or whatever. And so you got a little bit lucky there. But there were also some times when, the corners had to hold up man to man. You can't run zone all day. Eventually, they'll figure it out and start picking you apart. And when they did call man coverage, a lot of those were blitzes. They blitzed Russell Wilson 15 times in this game, which is a pretty high amount of blitzes. And they sent a lot of players. And so here's the unfortunate thing, right? The Vikings don't have Anthony Barr right now. Anthony Barr's on IR, and the effect of that is kind of what we've seen with the blitz designs. They're a lot less weird and they're a lot less creative because you can't utilize the gravitational force, I guess, that a guy like Anthony Barr has. Anthony Barr, if you are the opponent scouting him, if you're the opposing offensive line coach, you will see Anthony Barr beat a lot of running backs and a lot of tight ends, which means you kind of have to put an offensive lineman on him. And that gravity is something that Mike Zimmer manipulated all the time. He would kind of say, all right, they are forced to put an offensive line over here. They're forced to shift the protection in a way that puts an offensive lineman on him. And now that I know that they're going to shift the protection that way, I can do something else on the other side of the formation to take advantage of the protection slide I know they have to call. And if they don't call it, then Anthony Barr is on a running back or whatever, and he's going to win. He's going to get a pressure. And somebody who actually, if you remember a couple years ago, a game against Miami, where Anthony Barr just had this lights out game and absolutely blew up the entire Miami operation. This was near the end of Adam Gase's time there. He did not really respect Anthony Barr. Adam Gase didn't. And he didn't put offensive linemen on him. And so Anthony Barr kind of wrecked shop. And Mike Zimmer actually even said, like, after that game, like, wow, they like didn't game plan for Anthony Barr. That was pretty dumb of them. Or so, like, he like kind of called it out. And most teams will have to move something over. And then that's where you get suddenly, you know, slot corners getting unblocked sacks, or Harrison Smith getting an unblocked sack, or a weird stunt or something. Or suddenly, you know, you leave a good edge rusher one-on-one. And that's where you get a lot of opportunities. Well, you can't do that this year. So you basically just have to send more players. And a lot of times when you're sending that many players, now you can't exactly run a zone defense, right? If you're blitzing six, you can't run a zone defense with only five people in coverage. So people just have to win man-to-man. And this is where I thought the corners had a really, really nice day. And you know, again, you're helped by a blitz because it has to quicken up the process. So you don't necessarily have to worry about getting smoked deep or anything like that. So you can play a little bit of different technique. And I think that's part of the beauty of that design, is that it allowed you to get pressure on Russell Wilson. And by the way, when you're rushing six people, there's fewer rushing lanes for Russell Wilson to get out of. It's harder to escape that pressure when, you know, you just have more angles covered. And credit to the corners, credit to Gladney and Hughes and Dantzler for holding up in those situations and not rendering the blitz moot. A lot of this is why the Vikings were able to keep the Seahawks scoreless in the first half, is because these concepts were working, and it was kind of at this perfect intersection between not asking the corners to do more than they were capable of and the corners properly executing what was actually asked of them. So I think it's a good game for the corners. I know Cameron Dantzler had the really bad play and he gave up a touchdown, and so his grade's not going to be very high, but the other two corners do have pretty good grades and good coverage stats and stuff. And I do think that what I saw from Cameron Dantzler is more encouraging than not. And those poor plays and giving up big plays and that kind of thing, you just want to see it get like less and less frequent as games go on. And I kind of think we are seeing that. So I'm really encouraged as to like where the corners are right now, especially considering how poorly things went in week one. It's nice to see that that didn't seem to be the rule. It looks a lot more like the exception. So, and I think this is all like a really hard sell, right? Because they ultimately lost the game, but they did hold the Seahawks at 27 points. That's less than any other game the Seahawks have played this season. And I think a lot of that is to credit why the game was close in the first place, despite the fact, let's be honest, the Vikings were outmatched here and they kind of rose to that occasion and outplayed their expectations. That's encouraging, even though the scoreboard didn't end up in the Vikings' favor at the end. But if you want some things to blame, I guess you would go with Cameron Dantzler messing up at the very end. With that fourth and 10, you could go that the final play, the final touchdown, Russell Wilson looked off Anthony Harris. Anthony Harris actually had kind of an up and down game. I actually thought that he was a little bit at fault for the breakaway Chris Carson touchdown that happened right after the interception. He took a really bad angle. He missed and he actually took out another tackler. And Harrison Smith was mostly to blame there. Like Mike Zimmer said after the game, or after watching that tape, that Harrison Smith was trying to strip the ball and he didn't get a tackle. So he got a little too greedy there and he actually ended up getting shed. And it went from a big play to a full-on touchdown play, although it was already a short field. So the actual utility of that, the actual like value of that is a little bit diminished, but it's still like a really, really bad play. And I guess you could also blame, I get like kind of poor, a little bit of poor run defense Eric Wilson getting washed out one too many times, although he had a game that was more good than bad. You know, of course, he had the interception. He had a couple of cool disruptions. He had the one sack that I kind of think he was the spy and he freelanced. I don't think he was supposed to rush there. You'll take it, obviously, right? But it's the kind of thing you go back to the sideline and they say, okay, great job. Never do that again. But you still saw kind of some of his like strength and power issues where in the run, he'll either get washed out or there are times when he would try to go make the tackle, but Chris Carson was too powerful and would end up eking out extra yards. Sometimes that was the difference between converting a first down and not. And I think there were enough poor plays on the side of like the interior defensive line that we've kind of seen a lot, a couple of bad Jaleel Johnson plays, a couple of bad plays by like rotational defensive linemen. A couple of good plays for all of those guys. They all had their ups and downs, but maybe one too many downs, right? And then you end up losing the game. But I think most of the really, really bad stuff I would put on the offense. I don't think the offense that had like that bad of a game or anything, right? Like they still like scored very well and they were able to like sustain all these drives. They were able to drive out from behind their own 10 twice. That's really nice. But I would say if you are looking for a place to like put mistakes, I would probably put more on the offense than the defense, but I don't think either had like an abysmal game or anything like that. We're going to talk a little bit more about the offense and specifically blitz counters and stuff coming up in just a second. But first, I want to talk to you about Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They're all covered in this lovely little chocolate and they come in flavors that you would never think that you'd be able to snack on if you're like on a diet or whatever. They come in some of the classic flavors like peanut butter. They have like a chocolate raspberry one, like a banana bread one, which is sneaky good. You got to try that one. And then they have a couple of new flavors like cookies and cream or lemon almond cheesecake, like super wild stuff. And if you're trying to lose or maintain weight, you wouldn't think that you'd be able to snack on something like this, but it's high in protein. It's low calorie. It's low in sugar. And it's even keto friendly if you're that kind of guy. So if you want to get in on a box of Built Bar, you can go to builtbar.com. And if you use promo code Locked On, you'll get 20% off of your next order. That's promo code Locked On for 20% off at builtbar.com. It can be kind of tough to talk about erectile dysfunction without like brushing it off or blaming yourself, but Roman is here to get you the advice you want and the help you need with no shame. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. And here's the thing, a healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship you real medicine with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. It makes it a lot easier to talk about it when it's with a healthcare professional. So getting started is simple. Go to getroman.com/lockedon. You can complete an online visit. This stuff used to be really tough to talk about, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Just go to getroman.com/lockedon and you can get up to $50 off of your first month of ED treatment, a free online visit, and free 2-day shipping. That's getroman.com/lockedon for up to $50 off of your first month of ED treatment. getroman.com/lockedon. All right, so the main topic of this like final segment is going to be about blitz counters and kind of how the Vikings dealt with a little bit of a back and forth. There was some chess game going on in this game that shows up on the tape that's really, really interesting that I kind of want to talk about. But first, a couple of quick notes about the offense, just like in general. So I don't think it's gotten a lot of press, but it probably should be mentioned. Riley Reiff had an absolutely phenomenal game. He was out in the second level. He made all kinds of great blocks. He had a clean sheet in pass protection. He was really instrumental, and he was a huge part of why the Vikings were able to run the ball so effectively throughout the entire game. I thought that Garrett Bradbury had a pretty good game. He had a couple of lapses, and it certainly wasn't picture perfect, but I thought he had another like nice performance, and I'll take a performance like that from a center all day. Dakota Dozier had a lot of ups and downs. And the downs, some of the downs were pretty spectacular. Some of the ups were pretty spectacular. I think he kind of is going to be like that. He's sort of a boom or bust guard, which is not really what you want out of a guard. Like the booms don't do much for you because they're only one block over in the like scheme of an entire run play. And the busts kind of can undo the rest of a run play. So you don't really want that in a guard. But it's, I guess, what you get for a backup quality guard, which is, I think, what Dakota Dozier is. Of course, Drew Samia, that's been covered to death. He was hilariously abysmal. He did have enough plays to kind of like make you think maybe there's something in there if you can just develop it right. That's probably where the coaches are at. They're also probably just waiting for Elfline to come back, and I don't think they need to like ruin everything else to get him out. So I kind of doubt that Samia is going to get benched, even though everybody's calling for it right now. And I thought Brian O'Neill didn't have his best game. It was one of the weaker games from him, but that was kind of the offensive line. And I thought Kirk Cousins had a very up and down day. I think he had some really, really impressive throws, but you can't say his game was that good because he had that stupid interception. He got strip sacked twice. like, it's so frustrating to cover Kirk Cousins because he has these times where he plays like a top five quarterback in the league, but he just has too many moments over the course of this game where he gave the game away. He's given drives away. And it is like particularly frustrating. I don't think this is like here or there necessarily, but it is particularly frustrating that when he does have that kind of moment, it's always like the first play of the drive. So you don't get like any kind of drive going. You don't get a possession to let your defense rest or anything like that. It's like immediate. And if ever there were an emotional component and momentum and all of that, if you believe in that, this is like the worst possible outcome for it. So it's really, really frustrating. But beyond that, I think what I really want to talk about with regard to the offense is blitz counters. So first half, the Vikings score on three of their four possessions, right? They get 13 points. And so Seattle goes in and they say, okay, defensively, this is not working. That is not a successful defensive outing. So Seattle goes in and they come out and they decide they are going to blitz Ryan Neal a ton. Ryan Neal is their Jamal Adams backup. So you can think of it as they would have been like blitzing Jamal Adams all over the place, but he was hurt. So it was Ryan Neal. And that counters a lot that the Vikings do, right? Because if you're blitzing safeties off the edge and it's a bootleg, you kind of have, now you have a fast safety in the edge and it's different. You know, if you run blitz a defensive end and they run themselves out of the play, they might be too slow to catch up to Kirk Cousins. A safety can zip right all the way across the backfield and kind of still disrupt the play. It ruins a lot of the run plays that try to get to the edge, which the Vikings were really, really successful with in Houston. They were doing pretty well with it against Seattle as well. So it counters a lot that the Vikings do. And so then you have to get into blitz counters. And the Vikings, I think, they deployed this once or twice at some point throughout the game. They deployed all of these blitz counters. But I was kind of posting clips about all this stuff for the show. I was posting it on Twitter and somebody was like, okay, so what is the counter for that? When they start blitzing their safety and it counters everything, what can you do? And that I explained it in a thread. I guess I'll link that in the show notes if you'd rather read. But really, I think that became kind of a thing like, hey, well, maybe I'll just explain that. So here's how to counter a blitz 101, I guess. There's a few different ways that I think most blitz counters will fall into these categories. And the first is maybe you just start calling quick plays. Maybe you just have a quick play dialed in. And if they come and they blitz, you're actually happy about that. Say you have slant flat. Slant flat is a staple for every offense. The Vikings run it a ton. Everybody in the entire world runs it a ton. And it's exactly what it sounds like. You have the outside receivers run a slant, and then you have either the slot or the tight end or kind of whoever's on the inside run out to the flat. And that is a good concept to beat a blitz because slants are pretty quick and flats are also pretty quick. So if you see somebody blitzing, you can just throw the ball really fast and it actually doesn't disrupt the play at all. It's too fast to be disrupted by a blitz. So it's a good counter for that. The other thing you can do is adjust your protections. If you can pick up the blitz, you can actually really, really punish it, right? Like I talked about before, if you're blitzing six and you only have five people in coverage, those guys are going to have to play man-to-man one-on-one and you have whatever one-on-one you want in the secondary, or even if they blitz, you know, just one extra guy and they blitz five, you probably still have a lot of one-on-ones that you can test and Kirk Cousins can just kind of pick his poison. But you have to give him the time for those things to develop, so you have to pick up the blitz. And if you can just pick up the blitz, it's like free money, right? Now suddenly you just have a numbers advantage. But you have to adjust your protections, right? And you have to be really, really good at this. Mike Zimmer, very good at manipulating this. And so you have to get it right. You have to say, okay, wow, look at that linebacker. He's coming, which means I need to block him, but I was responsible for that defender. So you need to come block that defender and you need to kind of reorganize who blocks who and make sure you have it right. A lot of times that means you might have to change to make it so that, you know, you have enough blockers, right? If they're bringing six and you don't have a blocker in, now suddenly your running back can't run the check down. He's got to block somebody. And now you don't have a check down. That can kind of ruin the play too. But you basically, a lot of blitz counters fall under the category of just block the blitzer too, and then suddenly you have an advantage. And the Vikings actually did do that successfully in a couple of situations. Ironically, Drew Samia picked up a Ryan Neal blitz for one of the most important plays in the game. It was a third down conversion. I think it was a third down conversion to Adam Thielen that put the ball on like the goal line. The next couple of plays were ended up in that Adam Thielen touchdown where he reaches past the pylon, the last touchdown the Vikings got in the game. So really, really big spot for a good play from Drew Samia. The last one, and it's my personal favorite because I think there's a lot that goes into it, and I think it kind of reveals the complexity of the game. But I love looking at hot reads and kind of the if-then triggers that you can put into a game. So I've said this before, Kirk Cousins is a computer. You input things and he will output what you expect him to output, right? For better or worse, you know, he reads the teleprompter. But as his brain is a computer, you can put a lot of if-thens in there and he can actually execute it very well. This is something that you don't necessarily get with younger quarterbacks all the time. And one of those if-thens is you can say, okay, you're going to, here's your whole progression, right? You go to that guy, and if that guy's not there, you go to that guy. And if that guy's not there, you read the safety. And depending on what the safety is, you either read that guy or that. You can have this like whole complex cascading read progression. And then you can say, all right, all that aside, if they blitz, nuke the whole thing and throw a slant. We're going to have a slant on the other side of the formation. It's not going to mess up your read at all. We're going to have somebody run a slant. And if they blitz, you're nuking the whole thing and you're going to run a slant. That's called a hot read or an alert. And this is something that the Vikings actually had Stephon Diggs do a lot in 2019. And I think it kind of is part of what pissed him off. Because think about it. If you have a deep concept on the left side of the formation, or say like a flood concept. So there's a high, a middle, and a low, all on one side of the formation. It counters certain coverages, right? A deep route, a middle route, and a short route. And that's only three receivers, right? So on the other side, you'll have like a slant maybe, but that guy has to win. Because if that guy doesn't win his slant, say you put Laquan Treadwell over there and he doesn't win his slant, you die to every blitz now. If you know, it's blitz, throw the slant. When that slant loses, every blitz wins. And you can't really have that. So you have to put a good receiver over on that slant so that your insurance policy is worth a damn. And if you do that, well, every time they don't blitz, you're not throwing to that guy and you're kind of wasting your very good player. So Diggs would win a slant and be open. And, you know, the blitz wouldn't come, so he would never look that way. And sometimes the alert is like a deep pass, right? Sometimes it's, well, if they blitz, that means that they're going to have, you know, less coverage in general. And that means you're going to be really likely to get a one-on-one. So we'll send Stephon Diggs deep and that'll be, you know, that'll be the alert. If they blitz, huck up the deep ball and then they wouldn't blitz. Diggs would be open deep and he would be upset that, you know, the thing didn't happen. And because Kirk Cousins is a computer, well, they didn't blitz, never going to look over there. And he'll just do the read the way that he's coached to do it. So the coaches are fine with that, right? You're just doing exactly what the coaches say. But that was, I think, part of what made Diggs so upset. And I think it's a super debatable decision. Like, I explained the rationale behind it, but I think there's absolutely merit to saying, wow, so you're just gonna, you know, for the sake of like having a backup plan for something that might not even happen, you're just gonna waste one of your best players on like some backside alert rather than putting them in the progression and like using them in your primary, you know, plan A offense. And I think there is merit to that. And it's maybe a discussion, a deeper discussion for another day, but that's another thing that you can do to counter a blitz. And sometimes the alert isn't, sometimes the alert is, you know, if it's single high, throw this up. Or, you know, if the linebacker takes this cover guy, then you go to the other side and stuff. And there's a lot of different things about like quarterback progressions. Again, really deep discussion for another day to talk about like the way that quarterbacks progress through a play. As for the Vikings and the way that they counter the Seahawks blitzes, I think they adjusted really, really fast to the Seahawks adjustments. And that's why they were able to move the ball down the field many a time. And I think, you know, if you were going to blame something that went wrong on the offense, I would say, A, the Kirk Cousins meltdown stuff, right? Don't get strip sacked as much. You know, have a little bit more awareness. Step up into the pockets. Don't give defensive linemen a chance to swat the ball out when you're cocking back to throw. And, you know, don't throw that stupid interception. And then I guess, you know, you could talk about what went wrong on that 4th and inches. CJ Ham got blown up. Brian O'Neill got blown up. Neither of them did very well. And so then there wasn't enough room. And I think Alexander Mattison maybe could have finessed that lane a little bit better, too. So those are all small things, but you lost by 1 point. There's not going to be this giant, you know, criticism that blows up the whole game, except I guess Drew Samia, but he's only a right guard. It's only going to have so much impact. So that is going to do it for all of the Seahawks Vikings stuff on this podcast. Tomorrow, we're transitioning into Falcons mode. We're going to talk to Aaron Freeman of Locked On Falcons. I'm really looking forward to that because both of us are very depressed. So it should be very, very fun. And then, of course, on Friday, we'll dive deep into it. So I'll see you guys all for that. For now, we are throwing this Seahawks game in the trash. It's over. We're done talking about it. So I hope you got your fill. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at LockedOnVikings. Today's episode is brought to you by Visa, everywhere you want to be, official partner of the NFL. And as always, Skol.